ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायं उदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति न इष्टिकी। टुडे वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग टू रीड फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 23 टाइटल देवहूतिस लैमेंटेशन टेक्स्ट 43। प्रेक्षयित्वा भुवो गोलम् पत्न्यै यावान् स्वसंस्थया बहुआश्चर्यं महायोगी स्वाश्रम्य यववर्तत। प्रक्षयित्वा भुवो गोलम् पत्न्यै यावान् स्वसंस्थया बहु आश्चर्यं महायोगी स्वराम्यान्यवर्त्यतत। प्रक्षेत्वा भुवो गोलम् पत्न्यै यावान् स्वसंस्थया बहु आश्चर्यं महायोगी स्वाश्रम्यान् यववर्तत। प्रेक्षयित्वा आफ्टर शोइंग भुवः ऑफ द यूनिवर्स गोलम द ग्लोब पत्न्यै टू हिज वाइफ यावान एस मच स्वसंस्थया with its arrangements bahu aascharyam full of many wonders mahayogi the great yogi kardama sva aashramaya maya to his own hermitage nyavartata returned. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. After showing his wife the globe of the universe and its different arrangements full of many wonders, the great yogi Kardama Muni returned to his own hermitage. Purport. All the planets are here described as gola, round. Every planet is round and each planet is a different shelter, just like islands in the great ocean. Planets are sometimes called dvipa or varsha. This earth planet is called Bharata Varsha because it was ruled by King Bharata. Another significant word used in this verse is Bahu Aascharyam, many wonderful things. This indicates that the different planets are distributed all over the universe in the 8 directions, and each and every one of them is wonderful in itself. Each planet has its particular climatic influences and particular type of inhabitants and is completely equipped with everything, including the beauty of the seasons. In the Brahma Samhita 5.40, it is clearly stated, Vibhuti Bhinnam. On each and every planet there are different opulences. It cannot be expected that one planet is exactly like another. By God's grace, by nature's law, each and every planet is made differently and has different wonderful features. All such wonders were personally experienced by Kardama Muni while travelling with his wife. Yet he could return again to his humble hermitage. He showed his princess wife that although he was living in the hermitage, He had the power to go everywhere and do anything by mystic yoga. That is the perfection of yoga. One cannot become a perfect yogi simply by showing some sitting postures, nor by such sitting postures or so-called meditation can one become God, as is being advertised. Foolish persons are misled into believing that simply by some caricature of meditation and sitting postures one can become God within 6 months. Here is the example of a perfect yogi. He could travel all over the universe. Similarly, there is a description of Durvasa Muni, who also traveled in space. Actually, the perfect yogi can do that. But even if one can travel all over the universe and show wonderful feats like Kardama Muni, he cannot be compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose power and inconceivable energy can never be attained by any conditioned or liberated soul. By the actions of Kardama Muni, we can understand that in spite of his immense mystic power, he remained a devotee of the Lord. This is the real position of every living entity. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostude Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vamcha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yesterday's verse talked about nothing is impossible for a person who has taken shelter or refuge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's lotus feet, which are in itself called as Tirtha Pada, because his feet is a source of river Ganges. Kim durapada nam tesham pumsam uddama chetasam yair ashritas tirtha padaish charano vyasanana vyasanayat yaya. So here we see how after performing great wonderful tasks like creating a flying mansion and traveling in the space, Kardama Muni returns to his own hermitage. These wonderful acts describe him as a liberated soul. The restrictions that are put on normal living entities are not imposed on him. Even demigods, it is said in the purport, that cannot travel to planets that are not within their jurisdiction. But Kardama Muni was freely traveling just like air travels everywhere. So does this mean that liberated people are as good as God? And can a conditioned soul aspire to become a liberated soul? He thinks that while I'm conditioned, I've got a lot of restrictions. But when once I get liberated, then I can become one with the Lord and equal with the Lord. Is that so? And how does that work? What are the different paths that the living entity can take in desiring liberation and achieving the Lord's feet? And how is the liberated soul different from a conditioned soul? What exactly is the perfection of different yoga paths? These are some of the key points that are coming up in this purport. And last but not the least, what is the real position of a living entity? So, in this purport, Prabhupada starts off by describing how every planet is coming from the Lord and it is complete in itself. Somebody knows the Isha Upanishad verse which talks about it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamujachache Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. You know the translation as well? Anybody knows the translation of the Isha Upanishad verse? Yeah, what is the essence of that verse?
God is actually Purna.
Yeah, Lord is complete.
So whatever comes from the Lord, it's also complete.
Very good. Whatever comes from the Lord, that is also complete and perfect. So everything coming from the complete whole is also complete. And that complete whole is acute for the maintenance of all the living entities that are in that particular planet. There is no need for extraneous endeavor to maintain. All that is needed is there in the complete whole. Here we see it's not like God created a planet and then after creating it he created a Xerox machine and then he created a Xerox of all the planets and then he just threw them in the air. He actually created uniquely for the desires of every living entity can be satisfied. Actually, the desire of the living entity is a driving force behind the varieties, because living entities want to enjoy different varieties. And to satisfy that, the Lord being so merciful is creating different planetary systems with various climatic and season influence. And he does not create it with like an empty box, but every planet is equipped with resources full in itself to sustain the population in general. Now what do we do after that? That's with us. But when it is given to us, it is given as a complete whole. So this is governed by nature's law, which is also acting by the God's grace. Now, these wonderful features of the different parts of the world were witnessed by Kardama Muni and his wife. They could have gone on forever like that, but Kardama Muni, being not disturbed from his position of actual self, despite being surrounded by opulence, being surrounded by the Gandharva girls and his wife, he comes back to his hermitage. So this shows that a self-controlled person is able to utilize the resources and the mystic powers that are given to him in the service of the Lord. Even before entering the Grihastha ashram, Kardama Muni clearly had an exit plan. Also, how do I come out of this? I have a duty of creating progeny. Somebody has to do it. So in real life example, Prabhupada gives how even if it's a scorching summer, we have to cook. So and then especially in temple, you have to cook for the devotees and cook for the deities. Even if it is a summer, we have to go deal with the fire and cook. Another example Prabhupada gives is even if it is as cold as in December in India, not in Australia, it's nice and warm in December. We can have cold showers in December in Australia, but not in India. He says that as a matter of executing devotional service, one has to take a cold bath. So, but that does not mean that one has to go unprotected and get affected. So, here clearly we see how Kardama Muni is equipped with strong devotional service. Even though he knows that interacting with material nature is going to entangle him, and especially creating progeny, we read that it creates a heart not in the heart. But the same Bhagavatam tells how to cut the heart not in the heart. So he is equipped with protection and he is entering in the field of activity that he has been asked to, and then that's what we are seeing at the moment. Even though he is interacting with the material nature, he does not lose control of his own self. So this is something that we can take inspiration from. When certain services are given to us that are beyond our abilities, we pray for the mercy of the Lord, we take necessary precautions, do the service so that the activities can go on. At the same time, we don't get completely smashed by the load of the services. So, simple example is in the kitchen, for going to cook, we take the necessary precautions. We wear like protective shoes, we wear gloves when dealing with hot objects, and we know the procedures for lifting heavy items. With that knowledge, we go in. But does not guarantee that you will be free from any accidents. Accidents will happen. But at least you are prepared for it and you know how to deal with the unforeseen circumstances. So knowledge with action is helpful and it is transcendental when it is applied in the Lord's service. Whereas just having knowledge and not acting, there's no power in it. And the reverse is, acting without knowledge can be mundane, can be fanatic. It will lead you to reactions which are going to be binding. So, knowledge and action has to be combined. Then Prabhupada, in this purport, brings about what exactly is the perfection of yoga and what it is not. When Kardama Muni did his austerities and when he actually saw the Lord, after seeing the Lord, he started composing prayers and offered to the Lord. At that time, during the prayers, he says that now my vision or my seeing ability has got its perfection because I am able to see you directly face to face. In that purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, seeing God face to face, that is the perfection of yoga, and not doing some gymnastic postures or sitting postures that are being advertised. So, can a conditioned soul aspire to see the Lord face to face? And we need to understand how the conditioned soul is comes under the influence of material nature. When we say condition, we refer to being conditioned by the modes of material nature. Modes of material nature binds a person. A person in the mode of goodness is also bound. He is bound by knowledge and satisfaction. He is so knowledgeable that he has a tinge of pride that I am better than others, I know better than others. And he is so much so satisfied that he does not endeavor to do devotional service. He is so satisfied that he cannot listen to the super soul from within. This pride and attachment to knowledge and satisfaction later on breeds to the mode of passion. So the knowledge in itself is not bad, satisfaction itself is not bad, but attachment to it and trying to be in that state forever, that over a period, even if you remain in the mode of goodness, it will later on come into the cycle of where you may get into the mode of passion. Passion actually binds a person by giving him unlimited longings and desires. And this forces a person to engage in fruitive activities. So this hankering for material enjoyment, what he does is he engages his senses in sense gratification. And Prabhupada, when describing the mode of passion, he describes passion means attraction between man and woman. So it is not possible for people in the mode of goodness also to get liberated. Then what is the chance of those in the mode of passion or ignorance? Coming to ignorance, ignorance binds a person by madness and sleep and indolence. By this characteristics of ignorance, it defeats goodness and passion. Madness opposes the mode of goodness. There's a constant struggle between these modes. The living entity is being taken over by these different modes. So the madness aspect of ignorance defeats the goodness in a person. And the indolence, laziness, that defeats a passion inside a person. And then sleep, which is the third binding factor of ignorance, that defeats both ignorance and passion. Now, the path of a conditioned soul back to liberation depends on his own propensity. Now, we just now saw how a living entity is conditioned. So, is there any hope for these conditioned living entities to get liberated? Because the Lord is merciful, He does not prescribe just one path for everybody to take up and practice. So that is why He has created different paths through which, or to be more specific, He has created a progressive path through which living entities can come back to Him. That progressive path, what each person is conditioned to, he gets attracted to a particular type of path. Initially, a person may be unregulated, he may be enjoying sense enjoyment in a very unregulated way. And he may be even completely atheistic or not following any rules and regulations. But the sudden horrors of this material life, material world means there is always going to be ups and downs. That's why when natural calamities happen, even atheists turn to God secretly. I think a few months ago a devotee was saying how during earthquake, a well-known atheist, he was just shaken, and then he was on his knees and praying, and as soon as the earthquake stopped, then he looked around, nobody was there, then he wiped off the dirt in his shirt and started walking. So these calamities makes a person turn towards, there must be some answer to this. Even to achieve success in material life, we need to have regulation. So when a person seeking relief from material pangs, when he turns towards some way of regulation, and that's when the scriptures that are given by God, they come into his rescue. But still this person has got a lot of propensity to enjoy in this material world. That enjoyment propensity is still there. So according to his enjoyment capacity, there are different sections in the Vedas that talk about different ways of achieving different means. If you want to have a nice husband, there's a specific worship. If you want a nice wife, there's a specific worship. If you want to acquire large amount of wealth, extreme strength, physical prowess, as every aspect of enjoyment, there is a particular regulated way of achieving it. The advantage of this is that the person is starting to come in contact with Vedas. Some way, shape or form, the transcendental sound vibration, he is able to get in contact with it. Then he starts to see that he is getting results from such worship. Then his faith in that particular type of worship begins, and it becomes stronger as well. So when his faith thus becomes stronger, he starts to inquire further. He comes in association with qualified brahmanas who tell him that this material world is miserable, and there are more places where you can be more comfortable. Then he is given the knowledge of heavenly kingdom. So then he starts to aspire for heavenly pleasure, thinking that when I get out of this material world, I can go to the heaven and I can enjoy there. So then he starts to aspire for enjoyment in the next life. This aspiration for the next life is also an aspect of knowledge, where he thinks that this body is going to die, but I, the spirit soul, I live and I have next life also. Which means he is starting to progress. He is not just stuck with his current life. I have a life after this life also. So I have to start thinking about it. I have to start working about it. So then if I do pious activities, then I can go to heaven in my next life. So this act of thinking about next life is in itself is a progression. So he gets further exposed to knowledge, where he understands that even in heaven, life is not as smooth as it is. Even Indra has a lot of problems when he gets attacked by the demons. So he understands that heaven is still within the material realm. So then he further inquires, so then what is the actual way out? he comes to a point of understanding this material life is futile, and I have to have a goal which is beyond this material world. I have to transcend this material world, and I have to set the transcendence as my goal. Then I have to act in a way that I perform some kind of sacrifices. So this part we discuss now, where he extensively reads different sections and he gets different advices, this is called the Karmakanda part, because not all of them initially can take up bhakti. So this Karmakanda aspect is there, by some way, shape or form, he's in touch with the transcendence and he's starting to progress. Now he comes to a point where he understands that this material world is miserable, I have to transcend this material world. So now his goal is changing from enjoying this material world to achieving transcendence. Now his actions are also going to change accordingly. But the point to be noted is that his attachment to the work and the results, they are still there. But he is starting to move from Karma Kandi to a Karma Yogi. So at this stage, when he is too much attached to both the work and the results, such a Karma Yogi is called Sakama Karma Yogi. With the increase of further knowledge, he becomes detached from the results. Prabhupada, in Perfection of Yoga, he talks about how work should not be given up initially. No one should remain idle. And any type of work that you do must be done in such a way that it pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, yoga, we may think that how Arjuna, as a warrior, he is called as a yogi as well. As soon as we hear the word yoga, what comes to our mind is a person sitting on a yoga mat, on a lotus pose, then eyes closed and very peaceful. But how is it that a warrior who is fighting in the battle and is faced with many challenges, and how come he is also called a yogi? Prabhupada mentions that is Krishna consciousness. A person can be conscious of Krishna and fully engaged in his occupational activities, and still he can be called the topmost of yogis. Lord Krishna, in Dhyana Yoga chapter, he explains that sannyas does not mean giving up activities, but engaging in activities that are fully satisfying Krishna. Every person has to serve. Prabhupada explains in that section of Perfection of Yoga how if a person serves Krishna, he is called a sannyasi. Exclusively serving Krishna, that's sannyas. It's not just a matter of the social status. Whereas a person, if he does not serve Krishna, he automatically serves Maya. So that's how he becomes conditioned. And we earlier saw how material nature conditions a person. Now, this initial stage of work, then the aspect of worship of Vishnu gets added to this progression in yoga, where instead of worshipping the demigods and getting results, the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas advise him that whether you want a kama sarva kama va moksha kama utarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether you are full of desires, where you don't have any desires, or you desire liberation, please worship Vishnu. So now he is progressing and he is setting the goal of worshipping Vishnu along with his occupational duties. So he performs his occupational duties and also simultaneously offers the results to Vishnu. So results that a person gets from his work is his wealth. So the way he uses his wealth makes him a karmi or a karma yogi. So if he makes his home a nice Krishna conscious, if he uses his wealth to bring up his family in a very Krishna conscious way, then that's how he is engaging his propensity to work and the end results in the service of Lord. Such a person in karma yoga, he becomes even detached from the work itself. But he does not give up work. He still works to set example for others. So, just as a practical side of it, if you're joining a company, initially you don't apply for the post of a CEO. Yeah, I'm a new rec. I just finished my engineering degree. I want to become the CEO. Do you have any place for that? No. You start at the bottommost level where you are very eager to do the job. Why? Because you need money. You are so much driven by the result. Whatever time they tell, you'll be there. Initial days, everybody can recollect in their professional life when they are going for the interview and they have got their new job, first job, they will plan everything and be ready, where try to put the best show. Why? We are too much attached to the work and to the results. So initially, renouncing work is not recommended. So then over a period, you gain knowledge, you become well-versed in the work that you do. So then, over a period, then you become detached from the results of the work. So then you start to give a portion of your salary, say, to Red Cross or some other charity organization. We can see that even in our workplace, there will be a lot of cookies being kept, or then there will be some donation for many donation campaigns will be going on. So then this hard-earned money that you are putting your blood and sweat and earning the many money so that you are able to give it to somebody as a charity. So that's when the first step begins. Sucharu Prabhu was giving a class a few months ago where he explained about the aspect of charity in detail. That's when this aspect of sacrifice begins. But when a person sacrifices his work and the money that he has earned for Krishna, so then his devotional aspect begins. So if such a person gets more advanced in knowledge, so then he can take up the path of jnana, become detached from work also, and then progress towards bhakti. And so within bhakti you start off as a sadhana bhakta, and then you make progress. Now we have seen this path, so now does it mean that when a person gets liberated, he is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because we see Kardama Muni, there is nobody to restrict him. He was able to travel in the air everywhere. But Prabhupada here clearly says that no matter how much yogic power that he can display, he can travel, he cannot become equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Later on, we'll see how Karma Muni expands himself to, I think, 9 different forms. He expands himself. And yogis can do that. Yogis can go up to the point of only 9, whereas the Lord has got innumerable expansions. So there are some similarities between even the liberated soul and the Lord. The similarity is that they have oneness in purpose. They are also Satchit Ananda, and the Lord is also Satchit Ananda. But the wrong conception of the Mayavadi is that once I reach the Brahman level, which means I am experiencing eternality, I am as good as God. Whereas the definition of God says that you also have to maintain all the innumerable living entities, so then you can claim to be one with God. Whereas none of the even liberated souls can claim that they are maintaining all the living entities in all the universes. That only the Lord claims. He claims that in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Yoga of the Supreme Person. He says how he is the one who is maintaining both the conditioned and the liberated souls. So even after getting liberated, you cannot become one with God. You are still maintained by the Supreme Person. So what does these liberated souls do? They engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Once one gains the knowledge of the Lord and gets liberated, even they engage in the devotional service. Now, the conditioned soul, when he is bound by the material nature, he is not able to perceive things that are real. Say, for example, in a dark night, even though objects are present in front of us, we may not be aware of it. So in a dark night, if there is a ditch in front of us and we are walking, we may fall into it. So this aspect is called the Avranatmika Shakti, which covers the living entity. Then, again in the same darkness, we may perceive things which are not at all there. When walking in darkness, even if you hear some sound, is it a snake or is there a thief? So you are perceiving things that are not there in the darkness. So this potency of the Lord, which covers you and makes you think of non-real objects, that's called Vikshepatmika Shakti. Now, the other yoga processes, although they help a person to elevate, they will not completely eliminate these two curtains of yoga maya. These two curtains of Mahamaya. In fact, thinking oneself to be liberated even when he is conditioned, that is also one of the illusion. So to get out of this illusory aspects and to achieve perfection in yoga, no matter what path you are taking, one has to take up bhakti. Now, bhakti process is unique in itself in that after achieving perfection also, you still continue to do bhakti. Whereas a person who has perfected Ashtanga Yoga, he doesn't still have to continue doing Ashtanga Yoga. The process stops when a person achieves perfection. Whereas bhakti is a process, and even after you have achieved perfection, you continue to do it. Other processes may bring down the impurities in the heart to a certain extent. Prabhupada gives example of a cup of water filled with a dirt, if you leave it for some time, the dirt will settle down, and it may seem as if the water has become pure, but the impurities are still inside. Even a slight agitation, all the impurities come back again. Whereas bhakti yoga, so the other yoga processes may calm your mind down a bit, but they do not completely eradicate the impurities in the heart. Whereas only bhakti process is able to do that. So that is one of the key advantages of practicing bhakti. And as we see in real life, practitioners of bhakti yoga can be of any age. There are no restrictions based on age, caste, creed or color. No matter who you are, you can practice bhakti. As we are seeing, a lot of kids are also attending Bhagavatam class. They are hearing, they are chanting, they are taking prasadam. And even the mothers who are carrying their children, they can practice bhakti yoga and their children can get benefited. Whereas other yoga practices, if you do, only you get benefit. Does not mean that I perform Ashtanga yoga and your muscles build up. That will never happen. Whereas when we do Sankirtan along with others, everybody gets uplifted. In fact, the whole atmosphere becomes surcharged that there is a great upliftment. So even the ultimate goal of Ashtanga yogis, whether they are attached or too much, even if they are detached, they follow different paths. If they are too much attached, they have to worship the Virata Rupa and then come to the path of worshipping Vishnu. If they are detached, they still have to meditate on the Vishnu form, which the bhakti yogis are starting to do from the beginning. So that way we see how the Ashtanga yoga path, which is ultimately leading to worship of Vishnu, bhakti yogis begin right from the start. When compared with karma yoga part, we normally, Prabhupada explains in the perfection of yoga, how a mundane work, you get so much of fatigue, tiredness. Whereas work done at a spiritual platform, you don't get fatigue or tiredness. You are able to go on. So that way we see how karma yogis are also able to progress to bhakti yoga, and then how bhakti yoga is able to engage them, their propensity as well. For the jnana yogis, they control their desire and anger. They have to put a lot of effort from their side. Whereas bhakti yogis, the process takes care, the controlling of senses is done by Krishna himself. And they are always situated in their position of serving the Lord. That position of being a servant, they stick to it. So that is how bhakti yogis are able to have an advantage even over the jnanis. Other processes, other perfections of yoga can take you up to the point of liberation. Whereas bhakti takes you beyond liberation as well. Bhakti awards love of God, which cannot be awarded by any other path. Bhakti yoga is very easy, simple, natural and free from trouble. So these characteristics are explained in second canto, second chapter, verse 33. The last point I'll try to conclude with this is, other yoga practices may try to give relief to the material distress, but bhakti yoga gives satisfaction to the soul. So that is how a bhakti yogi is able to give up his lower propensities, is able to control his senses, and by controlling his senses, a person comes in touch with the super soul. That is how he is slowly able to progress. So this is mentioned in 1st Canto, chapter 6, verse 35. It is true that by practicing restraint of the senses by the yoga system, one can get relief from the disturbances of desire and lust. But this is not sufficient to give satisfaction to the soul. For this satisfaction is derived from the devotional service to the personality of Godhead. So for Bhakti Yoga is Lord Krishna personally takes in charge. For those who are constantly hearing, their hearts are cleansed by Krishna himself. That's this famous verse. Pravishta karana randrena svanam bhavasaroruham dunoti shamalam Krishna salilasya yatha sharat. The sound incarnation of Krishna, the supreme soul, that is the Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association such as lust, anger and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon the pools of muddy water. So that's the real perfection of yoga. Not by doing any other artificial exercises and sitting postures. So I'll conclude there. I'll ask if there are any comments, corrections, questions. Question is, I think you've asked at least 5-6 questions. What is Ashtanga Yoga? Yoga of 8 limbs, where you start from Yama, Niyama, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. Might have missed some. Yama, Niyama, Asana. Philip, you might be able to help. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. So there are initially do's and don'ts. Yama, Niyama. Then you start practicing, you at least start practicing sitting in a place, asana. Then dharana, dhyana. So you start focusing and you try to control the mind. And Prabhupada explains that this is a mechanical process of controlling the mind. Whereas while leading and dancing in the kirtan, did you make any extra effort to control your mind? No. So you are directly able to focus your mind, your body, your senses, kaya, vacha, everything is engaged. So that is how we understand that through the process of bhakti, especially hearing, chanting, kirtan, whatever others are doing, we are able to do the same thing. As mentioned, Lord Kapiladev will explain in detail in the future sections, those Ashtanga Yogis have two paths. If they are too much attached to this material world, then they cannot worship Vishnu directly, but they have to worship the Virat Rupa form of the Lord. Then even if they are detached, then their ultimate goal is also worship Vishnu. Patanjali yoga system, the unadulterated version of it, says that one has to worship Vishnu. But it gets adulterated because of the oneness aspect or Mayavad philosophy. As soon as they hear that super soul and soul are different, then you have to serve the super soul. So they are too much happy and satisfied in their jnana yoga that they don't want to do any service to the Lord. So they deny that super soul and soul are distinct. Whereas in Bhagavad Gita, in many instances in chapter 2 and chapter 15, is even after you are liberated, you and I are different. We don't become one. And I maintain you even if you are liberated. So Patanjali yoga system also got not properly taught. So when this aspect of worship is removed, and what remains is only the exercise aspect, pranayama, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. After that, but even after them, the object of worship has to be Vishnu. So it is also described in detail how such Ashtanga Yogi has to meditate on the different limbs of the Lord. And there Lord Kapila clearly tells the beauty of every limb of the Lord. So you cannot meditate on the form of the Lord in full, but one has to meditate starting from the feet, then slowly progressing to the feet, thighs, navel, chest, then his arms, then his face, like that. Even when we are taking darshan, it is recommended that we do that in that way. So yes, even with them, they need to have tinge of bhakti to succeed in their achieving liberation. Without bhakti, even Ashtanga Yogis cannot achieve liberation. Examples of Ashtanga Yogis who have taken up bhakti, I know one, Iyengar Yoga. The word Iyengar himself means it's like worshippers of Vishnu. That's from the South Indian side. So when a person got perfection in Iyengar Yoga, then he went to the person who started Iyengar and asked, what's next? He said, worship of Vishnu. So this is probably from a person from a Western background. So he went and asked. But other example from Shastras, Ashtanga Yogis becoming Bhakti Yogis. I can't remember. Anyone else knows Ashtanga Yogis becoming Bhakti Yogis in Shastras? The four Kumaras are Brahmavadis. They became... Yes, Dhruva Maharaj, very good. Yeah, he did practice Ashtanga Yoga. And then he also was told to do deity worship also by Narad Muni. Yeah, what was that's pretty much it, right? So then Bhakti Yogi is practicing Ashtanga Yoga. Yeah, Bhakti Yogi is practicing Ashtanga Yoga. Is the goal is different, to maintain their body, to do more devotion. So that is why Bhakti Yogi is for keeping their body fit and to do devotion more nicely. They practice, a lot of them do like pranayama or asanas, or so that they can do more devotion. The goal is not to make the body fit, but the goal is to make the body fit to serve Krishna. So the ultimate goal is not lost. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktavrinda ki jai.